This weekend, the United States is also taking action against North Korea, but in a different way. The U.S. says it may restrict humanitarian food assistance to North Korea because the regime won't show where the food is going. The U.S. has already suspended oil shipments to North Korea after the regime admitted it still has a nuclear weapons program. We're about to bring you an update on the other regimes that President Bush described, along with Iraq, as an axis of evil.
By seeking weapons of mass destruction, these regimes pose a grave and growing danger. They could provide these arms to terrorists, giving them the means to match their hatred.
U.S. officials suspect that North Korea already has nuclear weapons. The third nation, Iran, is believed to be seeking them. Iran has supported Hezbollah, a Lebanese militant group that targets Israel. The U.S. claims all three countries have shared missile technology. Yet local factors have forced the U.S. to deal differently with them all since the president made that speech in January. We start with North Korea, which remains one of the world's most heavily armed countries. When Bruce Cummings traveled to North Korea, he discovered that even the money was militarized.
There's an amazing image on the one yuan note, their equivalent of George Washington on the dollar. It's a rather beautiful woman leaping forward with her hand extended in a traditional Korean dress, and she's got a military pistol in her right hand.
Bruce Cummings is a professor at the University of Chicago. He has visited North Korea as regularly as an American can travel to an isolated country that technically is still at war with the United States. In 1953, the two countries negotiated a ceasefire but never signed a treaty to end the Korean War. Much of North Korea's army remains poised near the demilitarized zone that separates the two Koreas.
This regime is above all a garrison state. It has a million-man army in a country of 22 million people. And if you're a male from 18 to 28, you're in the army for 10 years. But when you think about that and all the militias they have, almost everybody in the country has a military background or maybe in the military.
North Korea's government built a modern capital city where people lived in Soviet-style apartment buildings and rode the subway to work. Today, the economy has collapsed and many people are starving. Yet the government can still defend itself. Military analyst Anthony Cordesman says the U.S. can't afford to risk a preemptive strike against North Korea.
Are we dealing with North Korea differently from Iraq? Yes, because North Korea has nuclear weapons. And the nuclear dimension is only part of this. It's important to remember that they've had chemically armed weapons and missiles. So we're talking about a kind of war which, when it begins, has no natural stopping point.
One doesn't deal with every circumstance in exactly the same way.
In a recent interview with NPR, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice made it clear the U.S. wants a diplomatic solution.
We are going to deal with it by mobilizing the international community, particularly the regional powers that have a grave interest here in a non-nuclear North Korea, to put maximum pressure on the North Korean regime to disarm.
Analysts are hoping that North Korea slowly opens up its reclusive society and starts to change. Bruce Cummings sees signs that President Kim Jong-il is interested in the outside world.
In his private armored train, I saw a photo of him standing in front of his aides, and on the wall was a 42-inch plasma TV with complete internet access. It's a very curious regime where the mass of people live as if it might as well be the 19th century, and the elite considers itself world class and doing just as well as anybody else, even though they're not.
North and South Korea have agreed to open rail links across the demilitarized zone for the first time in decades. And the possibility of change gives the United States incentive to move cautiously. U.S. officials are also watching change in Iran. Our travel guide to Iran is Rasul Nafisi. He's an academic researcher living in the U.S. Every year, he returns to his native country for several months. As soon as he arrived this year, he noticed a difference from years ago.
Entering into the airport, you find no military person, nobody uniform, except the officer who are issuing visas, of course. People in charge are women, with not a lot of a smile, but they are women. And they treat you very well, especially learning that you're coming from the United States, they become nicer.
A new generation of Iranians is agitating for more freedom. For weeks, students have protested a death sentence against a university professor. That professor said Iranians shouldn't follow like monkeys after the religious leaders who still rule Iran. Just today, 3,000 students protested on the campus of Tehran University. They were demanding a referendum on the country's future. Inside Tehran's homes and government offices, Rasul Nafisi found moderates and conservatives playing mind games with each other. Nafisi was about to meet a group of powerful Iranian conservatives, and one of Iran's leading reformers asked Nafisi to carry a devious message to the regime.
And he called me and said, I know you are an academic and you always want to search the truth, but in Iran we are not like that. And I said, what do you mean? He said, I have heard you over and over saying that the attack on Iran is very unlikely. Would you please say something to the effect that it is likely? I said, why is that? He said, because otherwise they're going to crush us.
This reformer wanted you to tell the conservative Ayatollahs, get the message through, hey, I'm from America, and I think the B-52s could be dropping bombs on Tehran any time now.
Not exactly in that format, but he wanted me to bring this threat alive.
Nafisi says he decided not to lie to the religious leaders. But when he was ushered into that meeting, he ended up talking about America anyway. The leader's staff asked about the U.S. political system. They wanted to know how they could deal with it more effectively. Many analysts suggest that Iran may not be as dangerous to the United States as the Bush administration suggests. Through intermediaries, the U.S. itself has been working with some parts of Iran's government, even as it denounces others. Western officials received limited cooperation from Iran during the fighting in Afghanistan. Military analyst Anthony Cordesman sees hopeful signs.
The administration realizes that it has to deal with the moderates in the Iranian government and with a population which is largely friendly, and that alienating Iran is really a remarkably silly thing to do, while containing it is absolutely necessary.
States like these and their terrorist allies constitute an axis of evil, arming to threaten the peace of the world.
That was the rhetoric President Bush used in January to describe Iraq, Iran, and North Korea. The administration's critics argued that the reality was more complicated. Since then, U.S. actions have been more subtle than the president's words.